here. It's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, February 2nd. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. Got Matt Norlander with me, and we got a lot to get to, including Kansas's win over Baylor. Norlander's latest piece on Cincinnati and a preview of Arizona-Oregon, Lonzo versus Markel, and other things happening on Saturday. But I wanted to start with breaking news from Thursday night. Duke has announced that Mike Krzyzewski is going to return to the sideline on Saturday for the Blue Devils game against Pitt inside Cameron Indoor Stadium. So Coach K is going to go down as missing seven games, and he's back as scheduled. When they announced that he was going to have back surgery, I believe it was the week of first week of January. I think they announced it on January 4th. He had surgery on January 6th. They said it would be 4 weeks. I wrote on that day that 4 weeks from then would be February 3rd, so it was possible he'd be back February 4th for the Blue Devils game versus Pitt. I had heard in recent weeks that maybe he was a little behind schedule, but regardless of where he was yesterday or 2 weeks ago, he is going to be back on the sideline 2 days from now on Saturday. You surprised he's coming back on time?
No, I mean, I did not expect him back for this game. I thought he would for sure be back for the Carolina game next week. But this, listen, clearly Krzyzewski doesn't want his team to get got by Pitt, which almost took out Carolina. That's what this, let's dig below the noise here, GP. That's what this is really about. He doesn't want Duke going down at the hands of Pitt. So, yeah, that's a late breaking Thursday headline. And we are recording this actually on Thursday night. So getting him back is good. GP, what was Duke's record while Krzyzewski was away?
4-3.
So as we move forward here, just a quick spin, that is at a decent sample size within a season. It's just over 20% of what the selection committee will evaluate. And if Duke is able to really hit a run here, and let's say it only loses one more time the rest of the season, the committee will evaluate what Duke was without Krzyzewski and will take those losses into consideration. At most, that would mean a seed line, in my opinion. If Duke is kind of consistently what it's been, it gets kind of picked off here or there, then his absence will have made really no impact whatsoever on what Duke winds up with on Selection Sunday.
It's interesting because when this news breaks, immediately on Twitter, fans start jumping in and saying, oh, of course he's coming back for the Pitt game. Last place team in the ACC. It's an easy win for Coach K. And it's like, listen, fans are fans, and God bless them, because without them, we wouldn't have this podcast or our jobs. But folks are so cynical. Like, when he announced that he was stepping away to have back surgery, it was because the team was struggling and he wasn't going to take these losses on his resume, when in reality, the truth was, his back was killing him, and he needed to go have back surgery because he wasn't going to be able to go the whole year. And why is he coming back for the Pitt game? Because it's literally the game that he was on schedule to come back with, come back for 4 weeks ago. So it's just always interesting how people come up with these theories of motivation for a man who's 69 years old coming off of back surgery. But like, it's actually far simpler than some people make it out to be. Why did he have back surgery when he had it? Not because his team was struggling, because his back was hurting. Why is he coming back for this game? Not because Pitt's terrible. Because 4 weeks ago, they said this is the game he'll probably come back for. Why do you think folks are so wired to do that?
Because it's Duke and it's Krzyzewski, and they love to hate. And usually, in general, it's easier to be cynical than it is to be sincere. I mean, that's my short answer on that. We'll be interested to see what Duke is going forward. They obviously have hit a nice rebound here, barely escaping against Wake. Was, in my opinion, necessary to kind of keeping them afloat, so to speak, and then they are able to get the road win against Notre Dame. So to have two straight road wins, now they get three at home. The toughest of those three is the sandwich game, Carolina, next Thursday.
So let's look back to Wednesday night, because there was a big game in the Big 12 between Kansas and Baylor. They came in with identical Big 12 records, not identical in the win column, but identical in terms of the win number of wins and the loss, and identical in the sense that both losses, Kansas's and Baylor's, had come at West Virginia by wide margins. And so it was set up, a big-time matchup, national television, both teams ranked in the top five, and then Kansas did what Kansas always does inside Allen Fieldhouse. Kansas won the game. And it was, I was sort of watching it on social media, and people started making the normal nonsensical Baylor jokes, but also like handing the Big 12 title to Kansas. Like, well, that does it. It's going to be 13 straight. Whereas really last night, all Kansas did was hold serve. If that game would have been in Waco, Baylor would have probably won the game. Baylor traded punches with them back and forth for 40 minutes. So one possession game literally in the final seconds. I know that Baylor lost and Kansas won, and this sentence is hilarious and also true. It is now official. Scott Drew has more losses inside Allen Fieldhouse than Bill Self. Scott's now got 10 all-time, never won there, and Bill has 9 all-time. He barely loses there. But I came away of that even more sure, away from that, even more sure than of Baylor than I was before. In other words, people are just skeptical of Baylor in general. Perhaps it's because of the history. It's not a blue blood. Perhaps it's because of Scott. Perhaps it's because you look at the roster and they don't blow you away in terms of NBA talent. But that team has now played through February 1st, and they've beaten everybody they've played except West Virginia and Kansas. And while they got demolished at West Virginia, there's no denying that, they went toe-to-toe with Kansas last night. And I don't think you should walk away from last night's game at Allen Fieldhouse thinking the league race is over. You can walk away from it thinking Kansas is probably going to win another Big 12 title. But if anything, that made me think that Baylor is a legitimate challenger to them, and that game in Waco is going to be terrific.
Right. I mean, the rule of self applies here. We're not going to predict Kansas not to win the Big 12 till it actually doesn't happen. But I'm with you 100% on this. Baylor did actually have me doubting in the final 2 minutes whether it was going to lose that game. And in fact, Kansas played tremendous pressure defense in the final two possessions, 30 seconds of that game. I think the crowd had some impact on that. Baylor was really, really threatening there. And listen, credit to the way that Kansas was able to consistently be ready for what Baylor was going to throw at him, because it looked like Baylor might have a chance to pick it off or get it to OT. Didn't happen. Baylor still has a chance at a number one seed with this. Now, it's going to have to win the Big 12 in order to do that, and it's going to be a tall task. But this loss, without a doubt, I mean, if they played the way that they played last night against Kansas, but that game happened to be in Waco, I think Baylor wins it. So now we wait on the return game. That happens in 16 days. They play Saturday, February 18th at Waco, or I should say in Waco at Baylor. And we'll see where we go from there. With Kansas overall, Josh Jackson continues to impress. Frank Mason looks awesome. The team looks pretty strong, and let's remember they are not at full strength. They don't have Bragg available. They don't have Azubuki for the rest of the season. And we don't have to get too deep in this if you don't want to, GP, but the other subtext was, and I had to write on this way late on Wednesday night, but you've got this LeGerald Vick situation that we really don't know from a public perspective what has or has not happened with LeGerald Vick. And he was accused of a domestic crime, and basically punching a woman twice in the arm, kicking her in the face allegedly. And from that, you know, a board that's not attached to Kansas Athletics had recommended that Vick go on 2 years probation. Well, what does probation mean? Is he even on it? Bill Self is not commenting on it directly because due to student privacy laws and Title IX, you are not allowed to discuss these kind of things regarding student athletes and students in general. So it works often as a cop-out for coaches, but there are legitimate reasons for student privacy laws. But in this case, it just happens to be an opportunity for the media to rightfully question what's going on with Vick. If the charges are legitimate, has he faced any sort of punishment? Because, as we've said on this podcast before, I don't consider Bill Self to be someone that would mess around with this kind of stuff, especially not in the modern age. And he was very quick to suspend Bragg previously. And at any point when you have a player that gets suspended for almost any reason, the university will publicly acknowledge that in the means of a short statement. And it doesn't have to give reasons for the suspension, but it does. We never got that with Vick. And so now we've got a situation here where Self made a quick read from a written statement last night. And frankly, he didn't look like himself when he was reading it. He looked a little nervous, I'll be honest. And I'm not saying that he was. It just clearly was something that he knew that he was going to have to address, and it's an uncomfortable situation. But this is now part of the backdrop on Kansas. It's a really good team on the court. But between the Bragg stuff and, you know, he's under an indefinite suspension because police found, you know, drug paraphernalia, and he's working on what essentially amounts to a plea deal that'll get the charge dropped. And then you've got the Vick stuff, who's he's still playing. Right. So there's just, we're right to question what's happening there. And Kansas has certainly become an interesting story, if not just for basketball reasons.
I think I'm no different than most people in the media. Like, I like Bill Self. He's an approachable guy. He's a down to earth guy. He's a fun guy. I didn't think that was a good look for him last night after that game. I understand he is limited in what he can say about a university investigation. Like, I understand student privacy laws, but you're exactly right. People use that as a cop-out all the time. And I'm not saying that's what Bill did here. I'm sure he was under orders from the administration. But here's the truth. You don't have to talk about student, you know, university investigations to talk about LeGerald Vick if you want to. Like, what if somebody would have asked the question? And I know he said, I'm not going to answer questions. But, you know, cameras were rolling. You could have put him in a tough spot on television, right, if you wanted to. Somebody could have said, do you think LeGerald Vick hit a woman? Do you believe LeGerald Vick hit a woman? We're not talking about the investigation. I want to know what you believe. What do you think? Are you operating under the impression that he did, that he hit a woman multiple times, that he kicked a woman multiple times? And if you don't, then that's interesting. We'll write that down. If you do, then why is he on your basketball team? Like, that's got nothing to do with the university investigation. And the idea that nobody asked him that was, I don't want to say disappointing because I don't want to come off like everybody in the room failed society. But, like, I have personally done that before. Somebody says, I'm not going to answer questions. Well, that doesn't keep me from asking them and asking right. them on tape so that we've got that visual of you avoiding my question. I've done that before to coaches, to players, to people. But I'm not saying – I'm not holding anybody to a certain standard, like whatever. But, like, I wonder what would have happened if somebody said, forget the university investigation. I don't need your comment on that. I want to know, do you think LeGerald Vick hit a woman? Because nobody's come out and said he didn't. And they could say that if they wanted to. LeGerald Vick could stand up and say, I didn't do anything wrong if he wanted to. But nobody said that. And sometimes silence tells a story in and of itself.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see where we go from here with this. Because the story, I don't think, is complete. And at some point, I think we will hear from Vick or Self. Remember, this is a team that's capable of winning a national championship this year. And we'll see when Bragg is able to come back as well. And if there are any more issues that crop up with Kansas, what happens there?
Let me tell you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports events and concerts has always been a confusing process. And none of the ticket sites that have been available for years and years and years seemed very interested in fixing that. But SeatGeek is different. What they've done there is they've created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. So next time you're getting ready to go to a basketball game, a football game, this summer, a baseball game, doesn't matter. Going to a concert, doesn't matter. Go to SeatGeek. Make sure you go there first. And here's why. Because if you use the other ticket sites, you don't ever know if you're getting ripped off. Am I really getting the best deal? Should I have gone to this one instead of that one? SeatGeek is going to handle all the price comparison for you. They search multiple ticket sites for you to ensure you get the best possible deal. So they do all the work, and you get to save time and money. So here's what I want you to do. Go download the SeatGeek app, and then just remember, next time you're going to go to a concert, sporting event, doesn't matter, use SeatGeek. And then if you use the College BB promo code, that's College BB, you're going to get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So get on it. Download the app, purchase tickets, use the promo code COLLEGEBB, and SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, promo code COLLEGEBB. That's SeatGeek, millions of tickets in one place. So earlier today, Norlander, you wrote a column about Cincinnati, and you sent me a text message and said, do not read this yet because I want to ask you questions about it before you actually read it. So I'm a big fan of your work. I like to read everything as soon as you tweet it. I did not read this. I followed your orders. What is it you were going to ask me?
All right. So if anyone that's listening hasn't read the piece yet either, you can kind of play along for a minute here as we do a quick edition of trivia on the podcast here. I would say Friday trivia. It is the Friday podcast where we are actually recording on Thursday night. So, GP, on your son's life, you have not read the piece.
Swear to God.
Okay. So, since 1992, the past 25 seasons, not including this one, there have been obviously 25 NCAA tournaments. In that time, there have been 11 teams that have made the tournament at least 20 of those 25 seasons. Quite obviously, Cincinnati is one of the 11. That's why I wrote, in part, why I wrote the piece. But can you name me the other 10 teams? And I'm wondering, and we can kind of, you know, fire them off the top of your head. I'm wondering how many guesses it will take for you to get the other 10.
Okay, Duke.
Yes.
Michigan State.
Yes.
North Carolina.
Yes.
Duke, Michigan State, North Carolina. Okay, that's those three. Gonzaga.
No.
They just don't. They don't have enough years.
They didn't. They weren't the early part of the 90s. They didn't get there.
Okay, that's a failure then. Arizona.
Arizona is correct.
Let me call up a list of teams so I can just like look at list. Okay, Louisville.
Correct. You're halfway home. 5 out of 10.
Syracuse.
Incorrect.
Damn it. All right. I'm through with that league. Let's go to this league. Kansas.
Correct.
I think that's... Oh.
That's six. That's six.
Texas?
Yes.
Okay.
Seven.
I want to say Villanova, but I don't think it's right.
That's not right.
Okay. Wisconsin.
That is correct. You are at eight. You have two more to go. That's a good call there.
Did I say Michigan State already?
You did.
Can I say them again?
You can, but it's not going to make you. It's from 8 to 9. You're 8 out of 10 guesses.
Kentucky.
Yes. 9 for 11. Can you go 10 for 12 right now?
Is it Florida?
It is not.
Okay. It's not going to be another Pac-12 school. I don't believe so.
Man, people listening right now are screaming this final school, I bet.
Okay. Does it have to be outside of the power structure? Oh, Connecticut!
Incorrect.
Damn it!
Give you a couple more guesses, then I'll give it to you. But you should be able to get this school, GP.
It's another school. All right, let me look through again.
Listeners, do you have it? I know some people do. Some people are like, this is probably it.
Okay, it's not an ACC school. Is that right?
That is right. It is not an ACC
school. Okay, now I'm going to look at the Big 12. No, I've already said Kansas. It's not them. It's not them. It's not them. It's not them. Not them. It's not a Big 12 school.
It is not.
Okay. Now we're going to go to the Big 10. I've already said Wisconsin, right?
You have.
Did we say Maryland?
Didn't say Maryland.
Is it Maryland?
It is not Maryland.
Damn it. You tricked me. It's not Indiana because they went through too many bad years.
And in fact, Indiana is only one shy. They've been to 19 of the past 25.
Okay. It's nobody else there, I don't think. Ohio
State? It is not.
Okay. So now we're in SEC. We've already said Kentucky. Did we already say Florida?
You guessed Florida, and that was incorrect.
It's nobody else there. I'm right. No SEC school, right?
You're correct.
Okay. Let's go to the Big East. Is it Xavier?
It is not, but they are close. It's a good guess. In fact, I might have guessed that too if I didn't know the answer.
Nobody else there. It's not a Big East school, right?
It is not.
Well, what other leagues are there? Pac-12? It's
Pac-12, perhaps, yes.
Is it Utah?
No, dude, but you're halfway there with that answer.
Is it UCLA?
Yes, you did not say UCLA.
I wouldn't have thought it was UCLA.
Really? Yeah, no, they did. They did it. Now, I think they lost one or two because of vacation, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they are. Wow. Okay. So yeah, they are the team. But that was fun. I dig that. But the thing is, like, you wouldn't have considered Cincinnati in that group, right? So Cincinnati's now 20-2, and I talked with Mick Cronin and about the team to a certain extent, and I think I might have something on this team in general next week. But in kind of researching out what Cincinnati's been, GP, it's pretty surprising to a lot of people that. At least I think it would be. This program really has a claim to being a top 20 program, and I mean that currently and historically, because it's top 20 in all-time NCAA tournament appearances. It's top 20 in all-time victories. It's only one of 11 teams to make the tournament 20 of the past 25 seasons. It consistently gets to the tournament, finishes in relatively well standing within its league, and yet we don't consider Cincinnati a top 20 program. I don't think that's its reputation. Well, why is that? Well, the piece, and I thought it was, you know, if I don't mind so saying myself, I thought it was pretty well researched, and Cronin gave some good perspective on it as well. Here's why we don't consider Cincinnati a better program. One, they have not gotten to a Final Four since 92. And Devin Downey, shout out to Devin Downey and his brief layover in Cincinnati. Could he bring Bearcats to the Final Four?
That's surprising to me.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the great injustices, I'll be honest with you.
How did Devin Downey not get Cincinnati to the Final Four? That seems ridiculous.
It actually does seem ridiculous. You know, people
look back and they're like, how did John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins not get to a Final Four? Or like, how did, what was it, Shaquille O'Neal, and who did he play with? Stanley Roberts? Is that true?
Yeah.
It was like, how did that group not get to a Final Four? Same deal. Look back at Devin Downey, Cincinnati. How did they not make a Final Four? Mystery forever.
Exactly. And so not only have they not made a Final Four since 92, they haven't been to the Elite Eight this century, and they've only been to the Sweet 16 twice in the past, 16 or 17 tournaments. So because they haven't had success in March, and we put so much stock into the tournament, that's one part of it. The other part of it is they almost never get highly sought after recruits. They don't have stars that we're attracted to. Lance Stevenson was obviously there, but prior to that, DeMar Johnson in like 1999 was really their last true blue chip recruit. And so because of that, when you don't have star players and you lose what was a star coach in Huggins, and he's been gone for so long now, the storylines and reasons to get people excited about your team in the preseason and the early part of the season just isn't there, because we're not as drawn to talk about you if you're not a preseason top 10 team and you don't have projected future pros. Cincinnati has dodged that. And then to me, the most underrated element, part of it, Cincinnati, the way they play, I get that totally. And they don't have stars, and it kind of goes together with that. But the other part of this, GP, do you realize that dating back to, 1945 or so, when Cincinnati started to become like a good program, relatively speaking, they've made 10 moves inside and outside conferences, some of them going to independence, leaving independence. There is no program that would be even considered top 30 quality that's even remotely close to that. Now, conference realignment happens, I think, more regularly than people realize. If you really look over the history of college sports, teams hop in and out here and there with relative frequency. But no team has been as erratic, because they were in CUSA and then they hopped to the Big East and then the Big East splinter. Now they're in the American. But remember, as you know, they were in the Metro and then the Great Midwest. And prior to that, they were once a Missouri Valley school. They were once in the MAC. And so because Cincinnati has never been truly linked by identity to a league, I also think that it hurts it, because UConn and Syracuse and Villanova, they were Big East teams, and Duke and Carolina, they were in the ACC, and UCLA and Arizona have always been in the Pac-12, and Kansas has always been in the Big 12 and the Big 8. So all of these things, I think, combine for people not to really appreciate what Cincinnati is. And they're 20-2. They're good again. This is probably going to be the best team Cronin's had, and they should get the best seed under him that they've ever had. This could be final of the year. Maybe if they can get to the second weekend, maybe flirt with an Elite Eight where people start to really take stock of what he's done and give credence to how good the program is.
No, and that win that they got on Wednesday night was impressive. Not because they beat Tulsa, whatever. They were a 10-point favorite and they barely won, but they didn't play well. They were down 9-0 to start the game. They were shooting in the low 30 percentile, like for the first half, and they just kept chipping away. And then it's like Troy Copain, 3-point play, get the ball back, Troy Copain, pull up jumper, game over, let's get out of here. Like, it was just tough, just a tough sort of the type of win that Mick Cronin loves. And I've talked to Mick about this before, when he inherited a mess at Cincinnati and they had nothing, and it took him a little while to get it going. It was like miss the tournament, CBI, miss the tournament, NIT. He was very much on the hot seat. Like, if his 1, 2, 3, 4, if his fifth year doesn't result in an NCAA tournament, that might have been it. Like, that really might have been it. And instead, they go to the NCAA tournament, win 26 games, and they haven't missed it since. They've been to 6 straight NCAA tournaments on their way to the 7th, and he's developed into a man who's running a program that is one of the more reliable winners in college basketball. We tend to use that label on Wisconsin and Michigan State. And I get it, because they've had a higher level of success. But when you're talking about the reliable winners in college basketball, Notre Dame seems to be on that list. Cincinnati under Mick Cronin is one of those. He's really stabilized things, and I think coached his way completely out of the shadow of Bob Huggins. Maybe that's taking it too far. Perhaps Huggs will always cast a large shadow, both literally and figuratively. But Mick's turned that program into his own, and he's gone from a hot seat coach to somebody who, they did everything they could to keep him from going to UNLV last offseason. Let's look ahead a little bit to Saturday, because the biggest game on the schedule is Do you agree? Arizona,
I don't know what you're going to say here. There's a few here.
Or is Arizona, Oregon?
Yeah, I probably would agree because we got a pretty loaded Saturday. But Arizona going to Oregon could ultimately decide the Pac-12 because these teams are the two best. At least they look like it right now to me. And this is the only scheduled regular season meeting between the teams. So Oregon gets this game on its home floor. What time is that tip, JP? Do you know?
I think it's 3 Eastern.
Oh, it is. Okay. Cause no, I wonder.
3 Central, 4 Eastern.
That's good because I thought this was an early one. So it's cool to get such a premier Pac-12 league game that doesn't tip at 10 or 11 at night or even 9 o'clock at night. So that's going to be smack dab in the middle of the afternoon. It's going to be a really, really good college basketball Saturday. I actually think we've had a few of them that have been nice. This could be just the most stacked and most loaded because now we're entering a situation. A lot of teams, you know, floating near on the bubble. These wins seem to take on more meaning and there's just more of a magnifying glass on it. Arizona, Oregon, probably the most anticipated game of the weekend for me. And there are a few of them, but we don't have a line yet. I just brought up KenPom, so it's got Oregon as a 3-point winner projected. Oh boy. I happen to think that Arizona might be, actually, let me ask this to you, GP, before we kind of wrap up with weekend stuff. And we can touch on Gonzaga real quick here because they're going to play. We're recording this before Gonzaga's road game at BYU. So people listening have the that on Friday, they can have the knowledge of knowing the outcome of the game before we do. But right now, GP, who is the best team in college basketball, in your opinion? Because I think this is the unanswerable question right now. I don't even think that you can make a strong case that can't be stripped down by other teams. But do you have a definitive answer? And if it is, who is
well,
it?
If the,
Does Kansas barely beat Baylor on its home floor, if you want to say Jayhawks?
Right. Well, listen, Baylor has, I think, 9 top 50 KenPom wins, and the lone losses are true road losses to elite teams, West Virginia, Kansas. Like, that's a great resume. They're absolutely in play. If you were building a bracket today, I would have Baylor as a number one seed. Gonzaga's undefeated, and I had somebody today say, really? You know, look at who Kansas has beaten. Kansas has beaten Duke. Kansas has beaten Baylor. Kansas has beaten Kentucky. And that is true. Those are 3 great wins. 3 top 25 wins. Guess who else has 3 top 25 wins? Gonzaga. And Guess what they don't have? A neutral court loss to Indiana or anybody else. So I don't know who two different questions.
I don't know who the best is.
No, there's no clear-cut answer. I'll answer this 3 different ways. Who deserves to be number one in the country right now? I think the answer to that question is Gonzaga.
Granted, if they haven't lost by the time people are listening, and I do think they're going to win, but I think it's going to be really close tonight against BYU. You think they're going to win too?
Yeah, I think they'll win the game. But like, you know, it's a true road game in a place that is historically tough to win at. Like, it wouldn't be the craziest thing if they lost, but I would suspect that they would be able to handle that. We'll see. And again, we're recording this Thursday, like late afternoon, early evening. So the Gonzaga game is still hours from tipping off. Who deserves to be ranked number one in the country? I'd say Gonzaga. Who's the best team in the country right now? Like, I'd take them over anybody else on a neutral court. I might say Arizona.
I think I'd say it too.
And then if the question was, who do you think is going to win the national title? I might take an entirely different team. Like, I might go with Kentucky, you know, just because I think their ceiling's higher than most other people's ceilings. I like Kansas, but like, they're really thin up front, really thin up front. And, you know, it hasn't cost them yet, but you could certainly see how it might in a certain situation.
I agree. So, well, I set that up for you to say. Arizona's on the road against Oregon. To me, Arizona, I would put in a top 3 situation right now for best team in the country at the very worst. If they win at Oregon on Saturday, they've got Thursday night, they've got Oregon State. Arizona should be able to handle that. Oregon State's just terrible this year. If they beat the Ducks, they will be 22-2. They will be fully healthy. Their two losses are both legitimate losses against Butler and against Gonzaga. They will definitely have a case. I don't have the guts to do it, though. I do think Oregon will hold on its home floor. Hope it's a really nice game, though. It's pretty cool that we've got a game in the Pac-12. We just wouldn't expected this, GP, 3 weeks ago. Like, we knew this would be an interesting game, don't get me wrong, but Arizona wasn't expected to be this good, and we thought that UCLA would be, you know, definitively the number one team in the league. That's not the case. So it's cool that we have this marquee game for the league on Saturday.
I'm taking Arizona. Straight up!
You Are you taking them because you like them to win, or just so you can do you saying straight up?
Just so I could say straight up.
Okay.
I just wanted to say straight up. And this seemed like the best opportunity. I mean,
okay,
can we
real quick here? I know we got to wrap up real quick. So
I want to stay in the Pac-12 for just a moment.
Okay.
Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball. Who gets the better of that one on Saturday? Because they're playing each other.
To me, it's the most anticipated head-to-head matchup in the country. I'd actually be interested to see how many scouts are going to be in the building that night because it's a garbage game. That's at Washington. That's actually a super late tip on Saturday. I think Markelle Fultz will have a better game from an individual standpoint than Lonzo Ball.
I think that's probably true, but Lonzo Ball's team wins by 20.
Yeah, that's definitely going to happen. Oh God, it's going to be terrible. But yeah, that's the nightcap, and for the NBA diehards that are interested in those guys, without a doubt. What else you want to hit on Saturday, real quick here? Because there's a number of good ones here. Kentucky's at Florida.
Yeah, Kentucky, and it's going to come down to, like, is De'Aaron Fox going to be able to play? I assume that he is, but like without him, they're not winning at Florida. They might lose with him at Florida, but they ain't winning without him at Florida.
I would agree. Give me Florida. Oh, gosh. If he's on the floor, give me Kentucky. If he's not, give me Florida.
You want Florida? Go ahead and say it.
Straight up. Okay, let me fire these off. Purdue at Maryland. Huge game for Maryland. We talked about it earlier in the week. Biggie Swanigan is right there with Ethan Happ for player of the year in the Big Ten. Maryland's got to prove it and get a home win against an elite team. Give me Maryland, GP. Yeah, who are you taking?
I think Maryland wins that game, and then I think Maryland starts to get the respect that it probably deserved several weeks ago. They are sitting here at 20-2. We've went through their resume and tried to explain why it is they're not, you know, considered a Final Four candidate. They don't have that signature win yet. They don't even have a win over a ranked team yet. But I think they will get one on Saturday when they play Purdue. Let me ask you a question real quick about Swanigan.
Okay.
I had to turn into mock draft earlier today. I put him like at 30th. Like, why can he not play in the NBA? Like, and if he can't, how often do we see somebody produce like that for a winning team at the Power 5 level and just not be able to make it in the NBA?
Right. I think Swanigan is going to be helped by the fact that he actually steps out a couple times a game. He's shooting
50%
from three-point
right.
range. Right. And I don't like that's going to help his overall skill set. The reason why, and I'm totally with you, because when I watch Swanigan play, like, he's a beast, not super athletic, definitely has room to grow in terms of what he does on defense, the defensive end, his lateral movement with his feet, his ability to switch screens. But to me, when I watch Biggie, that is a first-round pick. But I do wonder if he's going to have this just beastly statistical year, okay? And Purdue's going to do what it's going to do. Let's just say Purdue wins one, loses one in the tournament, whatever, right? And then he's going to get tested, and it's just going to become this thing where people are going to look at him as an athlete and kind of discount what he did. I think that's inevitable. To me, he is someone I would take a top 25 pick on, but I can totally see a situation where he falls. This happened, different kind of player, without a doubt, but Malcolm Brogdon was super productive for a long time in college. Dude, he's like a top three rookie in the NBA this year, yep. And anyone that watched college basketball saw that Brogdon was good merely beyond playing in Tony Bennett's system, and now you see him. Dude, he's legit. He is fantastic this season. I'm not saying Swanigan would necessarily be that in his first year in the NBA, but we always have a guy or two in every draft who proves himself to be a legitimate college player on a number of fronts, and then for whatever reason, because they don't clear certain bars, which are there also for somewhat legitimate reasons, because sometimes those people that aren't that good in college will clear those bars in testing and tryouts, and that's why they exceed in the NBA. I can see that with Swanigan.
Well, like you know, Ron Baker is playing like real minutes for the New York Knicks, and it's sort of a reminder, or perhaps a lesson, like maybe just being a really awesome college basketball player is good enough to play in the NBA. I understand there are exceptions to that, but so often we like, you know, well, he's not athletic enough. He's not tall enough for his position. He's not this or that. But the guy was awesome for 4 years in college. So maybe, just maybe, he'll be able to play in the NBA as well, because Brogdon has been terrific. Baker is playing real minutes, and neither of those guys were thought to have the careers that they're having right now. Literally nobody in the NBA anticipated that back when it was draft time.
I agree. All right, real quick. Virginia hasn't played Syracuse since it blew that lead in the Elite Eight last season. It goes to Syracuse at noon on Sunday. Syracuse winning that game would give itself somewhat of a decent NCAA tournament resume. The Orange need it. Virginia probably needs it to have a chance at a number one seed down the road, I would think. They can get that. That's an interesting way to kick off Saturday. Creighton's looking good. Xavier plays at Creighton. Xavier, they don't need it, but just an interesting Big East game there. And Notre Dame at North Carolina is one. And then Wichita State and Illinois State. Wichita State hosts. That's for, you know, if Wichita State, they're going to be interesting. If they don't win that game, GP, even though the Shockers are highly rated by KenPom, they probably don't have a case for an at-large if they get swept by Illinois State. So that's a big-time game down for Greg Marshall's team in Kansas.
And remember, Illinois State going to come in shorthanded. So yes. So Wichita ought to be able to handle that, but we will see. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That is the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. So please do that. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you again on Sunday night. Till then, take care.